Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour says that no one ever wants to admit that he or she needs help. We're afraid of seeming weak, or maybe it's an admission of failure. We don't know how to help, how to ask for help. And we're also parts of this country where we really believe in independence. You can pull yourself up by the bootstraps, and you can do it, and you can do it by yourself. Well, our guest this hour has many years of experience as both a personal and a Fortune 100 executive coach. She is the founder of an organization whose mission is to assist individuals in both in corporate and non-corporate environments to achieve personal and professional fulfillment. Nora Bouchard is with us, and she is also the author of a book on this very topic. It is titled May Day, Asking for Help in Times of Need. We thought it would make an interesting talk show because it's something that affects all of us. There are times when we do need to ask for help, and why is it hard for many of us to do that, and what are the benefits, not only for you if you've asked for help and you receive it, but to the person who's giving you help as well. So we'll hear your stories. We'll hear Nora's stories as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Nora.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
Thrilled to be here.
Good. Really nice to have you here. You know, it's one of those things that I really haven't thought of very much until I knew that you were going to be on the air here. It is an interesting thing to think about, and you tell this story early on in the book where you must have been one heck of an independent soul who didn't want to ask for help from anybody. You tell this airplane story, and it's really amazing. And there was somebody willing to help you.
There was, absolutely, and I don't think that I was actually at that time all that different from most Americans, and certainly not that different from most Midwesterners. We really pride ourselves on being very independent and doing things on our own, and at that point in my life, I had created my life in such a way that I really was capable of pretty much doing everything I needed to do on my own. Mm-hmm. So I was running my own business. I was dealing with my own clients. I was handling every aspect of my life like I thought I was supposed to, like a grown-up, like an adult.
Yeah.
And there was a time when I was traveling for work and I was exhausted, which is a key sign that perhaps you need help. Mm-hmm. But we can get into that. But I was beat at the end of a week's work worth of coaching at a client site. And flight had been delayed. And by the time we got onto the plane, I was irritable, to say the least. And I remember being the very first person on the plane. I was thrilled to be able to get there and sit and maybe just zone out for a while. And there was a gentleman walking behind me, and he was really in my space. He was so close to me. It was so annoying. And I got to my seat, and I was very conscious of this gentleman, and at the same time, I was very conscious of the fact that I was going to have to lift this very heavy case up into an overhead bin. Mm-hmm. And I tried getting the handle of the suitcase, you know, drop down into the body of the suitcase, and it wouldn't work. And I stood there trying to shove it and move it down, and it wouldn't do it. And the gentleman behind me, he very sweetly says, oh, can I help you with that? Hmm. And I said, no. I said, no. It's so ridiculous. I said, no. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, this is what I want. This is what I want to do, is to get help. Right. But no, I'm so stuck in that frame of mind. And eventually, I slam it down, slam it on my thumb.
Ow.
So now I'm standing there, sucking my thumb, looking like a child, acting like a child. And he's again, can I help you with that? No, really. The third time, I try to lift the case up into the bin, and I couldn't do it. And it was as though my arms just said enough.
Yeah.
And he sweetly reached over, picked up the bag, gently placed it into the bin, and I finally turned and looked at him. And he had the most lovely, beatific smile on his face. It was as though I was looking into the face of an angel. He was so sweet. And, you know, it's so funny. I tell this story, and a lot of the women are like, did you meet him later?
I'm sure. Was he the man of your dreams?
No, he wasn't. But that's okay, because there was a small connection there that was just person to person.
Yes.
And I think that is what we miss out on when we're always trying to do things on our own.
Yeah. And you talk in the book about how you really were at that moment, and this can happen if we're open to it many times in the course of our lives, touched by another soul. You remember him now, all this time later. You're telling this story about him.
I'm sure he has no idea who I am, or, you know, is no recollection of that event at all. For me, it was life-changing.
Yeah, it sure was. You wouldn't be writing this book and talking about this now, perhaps, if it weren't for him. So let's talk more about what is this trait, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard what you said, particularly women who are trying to make themselves heard and want everybody to know how competent they are and have to work doubly hard to show how good you are and how you can do this by yourself. Where does that come from? Is it peculiarly American for some reason?
No, I think to a certain extent that desire to appear competent and strong is pretty universal. Although I will say, even this morning I was coaching a client who had created her own life of self-sufficiency. And even today I was talking about this idea of really opening up and letting others in and really cutting yourself some slack, because we tend to think that we do have to do it all on our own, and we don't. So I think it is a universal issue that we're all dealing with.
Mm-hmm. You have cited, and I'm wondering if these figures have changed at all. This was the focus of a book some years ago, I think 2007 or 2006, that attendance at club meetings has gone down so much. Church activities have decreased. Having friends over to our house has dropped 45%. The number of close friends that we have has gone from 3 until 2. Those are from the mid, 2005 and 6. Has that changed at all, or are we becoming people who at least have other people around us and we depend on them more now or less?
You know, I don't have any statistics indicating that it has improved. I'm afraid that we are still going down this path of isolation. And I think it's becoming problematic. I think just in some of the ills in society that we have, there are plenty of people out there who are not reaching out, who are not being touched by another, who are not connecting somehow. And we're missing those vital connections that keep us alive and keep us healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think about the poor souls, the people who are lost and confused, who really continue that way until they do something awful. And even if that's even an extreme case, even on a day-to-day basis, there are plenty of people out there who are not getting that simple affection, that simple touch, that simple connection that could change their lives.
Yeah. You think of all of the people in need of help who have this fiercely strong elderly I'm thinking of, who want to live in their homes and want to be fiercely independent and maybe need really basic help with getting food and getting to the doctor and just having another human being to talk to. But this, I got to be by myself and independent, wins out.
Well, I hope my mother's listening to you.
Where is your mom?
My mother's in Lansing, Michigan, and she is living independently. And we do a lot to assist. And in fact, these days, about 65% of the adult U.S. population is considered a caregiver of either someone who's ill or elderly.
Oh, my.
And that is a third of the adult population in the U.S. Mm. And my question is, who cares for the caregivers? Mm-hmm. How are they reaching out? How are they asking for what they need?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are services out there now, which is great, but if you're on a limited income, and most elderly are, if you're the eldest daughter, you're the typical caregiver, and you're very likely to end up in poverty if you leave a job to take care of a family member, to take care of someone, and you leave a job and you take a lesser position so you have access to that person that you love. You know, there are all sorts of risks involved, and people don't have the financial wherewithal to purchase these services that are out there. So they have to learn to reach out to others, mm-hmm. to other family members, to neighbors, to communities, to churches and synagogues and mosques, to find those resources that might be a little less expensive, maybe even free.
Does your mom reach out? Because I know you also tell the story of your having to, when you were going to have surgery and you realized, I have nobody to be with me, that you did reach out to her. We'll hear that story in a moment. But does she feel free to reach out, not just to you, but to others now when she needs help?
She does. She was, I tell you, my mother is a woman of real grace, and she even got to a point, and a lot of the elderly really resist this, partly because of her focus on independence, but getting to that point of letting go of the car, of actually saying, okay, I'm not going to drive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She made that choice herself and gave the car to one of my siblings. So as a result, she does need a little bit more assistance getting to church and getting to the grocery store and getting her hair done and visiting friends. So she tends to kind of work out a system. So we're all taking turns. We're all very aware and communicating with each other on what my mom needs at any given time. But she will, if she needs something, speak up and ask for it.
Well, she read your book, right?
Yeah, I think she did.
Yeah. I would hope so. And you learned a lot when you were to have this surgery that required you to be in the hospital, and you realized, and I think you even cried about it then, that I don't have anybody to be with me.
No, I know. I was so sad. You know, again, this was around the same time period I had created this life, which was great, and on the surface looked fabulous. You know, I was living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dating a guy who we had dated for 3 years. Mm. And it turns out I needed surgery and was going to have to be cared for a week after the surgery. And I asked him to take care of me, and he said no.
Oh.
Actually, he said yes at first, and then a couple of days before the surgery, he said no. So I was actually forced to call my parents, who were in their 70s at the time. And they jumped at the chance to come help me. They were thrilled to do it. And I think our relationship as adults really changed as a result of it, because we actually were able to spend time with each other in a little different kind of venue. I also come from a really large family. I have 8 siblings.
Oh,
so,
my.
So it was really rare for me to get private time with my mom and dad, you know, just the 3 of us. So it was a great gift and a great opportunity. But there was one point after the surgery, I woke up in the hospital bed and I saw my mother was curled up very uncomfortably in one of those chairs they have, visiting chairs, mm-hmm. in the hospital room. And she was there sleeping. And I just realized I had to just give in to everything, that I just had to let go and really stop controlling what was going on, and to let someone else take care of me for a change.
Yeah. Well, I hope you
So it's kind of interesting. I have these stories in the book, which is great. But it's a lesson that I have to keep relearning over and over again, because our tendency as humans is to see ourselves as separate.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about, for people, many people, it's really, really difficult to ask for help. How do you go about doing it? There are steps in the book, and we'll talk about those. And I hope you dumped the guy. I assume you did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah. So that was good. Our guest is the author of May Day, Asking for Help in Times of Need. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Nora Bouchard is our guest, and she is the founder of INC, Coaching Through Inquiry. It's dedicated to assisting individuals in corporate environments, non-corporate environments, to be their best and most authentic selves. And she's done this kind of work for a long period of time. Asking for help this hour of the program. Do you find it difficult? How do you go about asking for help? Is there something peculiarly American about our wanting to be very independent souls? What happens when you do ask for help? Do you feel it necessary that you also say, by the way, I can help you do this if you do this for me? What does it do for the person who is giving the help? That's a good thing, isn't it? We would love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, our phone number is 800-486-8655. Nora Bouchard, author of May Day, Asking for Help in Times of Need, is our guest this hour. And we have calls coming in, so let's take some. Jackie in Milwaukee is first. Hi, Jackie.
Yes. My question would be, where do you go to ask for help if you're alone? I don't have family. I'm a truck driver, so I'm basically alone most of the time. I need a colonoscopy. But I wouldn't have the slightest idea who or where to go to ask for somebody to attend me after the colonoscopy.
Oh, yeah. Nora?
Jackie, I can completely relate to your situation, and I know how difficult it is. I think there are two things to think about, and that is, first, that there are people, everyday people that you run into, who, even if they can't help you directly, may know someone who could. It's funny how the world works, but once you start declaring what you need, for example, just like you just did, saying that you do need help, it's funny how things start showing up. At least that's been my experience. So declaring that you need help, mentioning it to, you know, some of your fellow truckers on the road, seeing what they've done in certain situations, even if they can't help directly, they may know someone who can. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that people want to help us. And I think it's something that we forget about. But I bet if anyone reached out to you, Jackie, and asked you for help, you'd be there, Johnny on the spot, willing to help, doing what you can. It's in our nature. Now, we don't want to overdo it, but we do. Our natural inclination is to help when asked.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about, because you break this down into steps, and sometimes, like going to have a colonoscopy, you've got to take a leap and you just got to do it. You may not want to do it, but you have to do it. So you talk about this leap of take a leap, you need to ask, which sounds fine, but for some people, it's really hard to do that. So how do you prepare yourself to ask?
Well, I think, first of all, the first step is to really admit that you need help, whatever it is. And you need help postoperatively. You need help after the examination. You need help being driven there.
Yes.
You know, whatever it is, you just need to name it. You need to declare that, hey, I need help. And then I think one of the things that we, especially, I think, as Americans, we're so hard charging. And we have such high expectations for ourselves that we forget to cut ourselves some slack. And we skip that step about being self-compassionate, about recognizing that we're only human and that we can only do so much, and that we really do deserve to ask for the help that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, first of all, naming it, and then deciding deliberately that you are going to cut yourself some slack, that you're going to take care of yourself, can propel you to the point of taking that leap and asking. And, you know, it's so funny when you're standing on the cliff and you're overlooking that chasm, it seems terrifying. But as soon as you make that jump, things change. And they usually change in a very positive way.
And I know, because I know people who have done this kind of volunteer work, that there are places that offer, agencies that offer, that have volunteers who will take you to medical appointments, too, if you can't
Absolutely.
Do a cab or something, that should be investigated, certainly.
Absolutely. And I think certainly with Jackie's situation, I think he is probably not the only one in that situation.
Right.
Not the only one who's experienced that at all.
Absolutely. All the best to you, Jackie. Just ask, right? Take the leap and ask. Jerry in Fond du Lac. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
All right, Jerry, how are you?
I'm alive and mostly kicking. How's that sound?
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah, I'm not a rockhead anymore, but I'm getting older.
All right. Go ahead, Jerry.
You guys are, I was just wandering through the music stations, and I happened to stumble upon your station as I was driving, and I don't think it was an accident. I don't believe in the coincidence thing anymore. It was important that I find the station at this time. And it's just talking about asking for help. I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hmm.
Finding the courage, I guess, at that point to admit that I had a problem when you were just talking about standing on the cliff, that cliff is razor sharp. And just trying to come through that wall, admit there's a problem, but asking for help is just against my nature because I'm a fixer. I can help you, but I can't help myself, and I can't ask for help.
Hmm.
And I had to fight through that for the last 3 years, and I've had to fight through it every day. It's the 24-hour-a-day thing, and you talk about steps and things like that. I am learning every single day. I still attend my meetings. I still talk with the people there, and I rely on their honesty and our ability to share.
So, Jerry, when you first decided that you would ask for help, how did that happen?
Emergency room. My daughter calling 911. I was battling through cancer and between a mixture of drugs that I was on. I didn't even realize that I had too much in me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sit down and you do a self-evaluation, and first thing you got to do is get honest. And second thing you have to do is you have to reach out. I was in the muck. I was going down. And if I didn't find that ability through my higher power, for lack of a better word, was to ask for help. And it was just so hard to do because it was against my nature. I could stand alone. I could fight the world. I could win.
Yeah.
Norm. Yeah. Yes, thanks for that, Jerry. I really appreciate you offering that up. And I'm sad to say that there are so many people with your journey. Or similar journeys. I have coached a number of people in the past who have pushed themselves to the point and have lived this independent life to such a point that they have had to be hospitalized, that they, because they did not reach out and ask for the help that they needed, it had to be forced upon them somehow in order to save their lives. And in fact, there was a client years ago, I remember, that he was calling me from his bed in a hotel room. He was suffering his third bout of pneumonia, and his boss told him, "You're not coming back to the office unless you get help." And so he reached out to me, in addition to physicians, and we worked on this subject, this very topic, together, because he wasn't asking for what he needed, and he was doing it all himself. And that idea of being a fixer and a problem solver, oh, it's so attractive. We love that idea. It's a great way of seeing ourselves, but it's incredibly limiting. And actually, it can be very dangerous and life-threatening long-term.
Jerry, thank you very much. I'm glad you were listening at this moment. Jerry said, hard for him to ask for help, but that he's always willing to be there to help somebody. And Marlene echoes that with a message on Facebook. I don't ask for help. I have to be desperate, but I always look or seem to tell when others need help. It's scary.
You know, I think that's great. Actually, it's good that she's out there helping. We all need that. What I found, especially when I think back to my previous life, I had surrounded myself with other people who were okay with asking for help. In fact, they really relied on me. And in fact, I was the strong one in relationships. I was always there for everyone. But when it came to my turn, I didn't feel as though they were going to be there for me. And so I had attracted these people into my life who were, I think, probably pulled in by my self-sufficiency because perhaps they didn't have that themselves.
Mm-hmm.
My life is very different now, and I'm surrounded by people who are more willing to ask for help and give it, and it's a bit more balanced. And the relationships I have now, I think, are more healthy and more kind of a natural reciprocation, a nice back and forth that we have.
Yeah, so the relationships really have very fundamentally changed.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, absolutely. I realized that I was just surrounding myself with people who really made me feel great because I was always there helping them. And that's a great ego boost for the person who's helping. But it doesn't necessarily satisfy some of the deeper needs that I had.
Let's go to an anonymous caller next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm continuing on what you're previous conversation has been. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My husband passed away 28 years ago, and I said goodbye to him in the morning, and 2 hours later was holding an empty hand. And so in those 28 years, I feel I've done it myself. I closed up everything. I had 16 houses. I had to rid myself of. I wasn't in the position to take care of them, et cetera. Anyhow, not too long afterwards, I had a very good friend that I'd had all my life, and she was in the same position with a business, et cetera, et cetera. She said, you know, all those people that came to the funeral, she said, what may I do for you? And when I went to them, I'd say 99% I got, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that right now. I've got this and this and this and this. So my comment is, when you go to a funeral, you definitely want to be of help wherever you can. Be it sincere and follow up. It would mean so much. 3 decades later, I can say this. Please, whoever you are, when you definitely feel that way, follow up or don't make the statement.
Nora.
Yes. I hear the sadness and disappointment in your voice. It is real easy to say, and especially in those situations, sometimes we're at a loss for words and don't know exactly what to say. And it is a shame that people have not been there when the request was made. In the book, I do talk about the request for help really being the opening of a conversation. And it's not just a simple question that we're extending. It's an invitation to bring this person into your life and to have them contribute from their own talents and energies. And so we want to make sure that the opening for the conversation stays wide, that we can talk about, this is what I need. You know, can you help? Would you be able to help? If you can't help, who can help? When might you be able to help? You know, it's an opening for additional questions and additional discussion about what's really needed. So I don't want you or your friend to feel as though what you did was wrong, because you absolutely were not. And I think we forget that it is really about a conversation, that people are willing to help deep down, and they also have lives that need to be managed, and they need to find a way of working in the request. And I think that's a normal kind of average kind of expectation to have. You know, I don't in particular know what the situations were, but it's sad that you didn't get the help that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there may have been some other opportunities, that others, they might have come back to you later and said, oh, well, you know, I wasn't able to help before, but maybe I can help now.
Thank you very much for your call. Catherine offers this on Facebook. A couple years ago, someone asked me why I always help others, and I responded that it makes me feel good. In turn, they said, why are you depriving others of that same feeling? Now I ask for help.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I love that.
That's really true. It really is. It is one of the reasons why we should ask for help, because when people do give us help after our request, it is coming from a place of talent and energy and something within them, whether it's making a casserole or and bringing it over to your house or mowing your lawn. They're giving you something right. of themselves, and it is so life-affirming. It feels so great to do it. Is it ever?
And to receive it is it, it? Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk more. Is that what you mean when you write about the law of reciprocity?
I do. It is a very basic law that whether we realize we were paying attention to it or not, we all kind of adhere to it. It's the give and take, the tit for tat, the I'll rub your back if you rub mine. It's that attitude that exists in life. We know we can't get through this life without support from other people. We just can't do it. We always need help somewhere along the line. And so when we give help, when we're requesting help, we should also recognize that there's going to be an opportunity for you to give help back, whether it's paying it forward to someone else or giving it back to the person who helped you in the first place.
Yeah. Mary in Milwaukee. Hi, Mary. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm an over-the-road truck driver passing through, and I'm on a headset. I just wanted to let that be known.
Thanks,
it's
Mary.
It's illegal for me to talk without it.
All right.
I just wanted to say you brought up some really good points, and I find that a lot for me. I'm an owner-operator, and I have to be strong, and I have to take care of myself out here. But I've learned that there's a point where it's beneficial to me to ask for help. And I have learned that. And I am a giver also, like yourself. I have tended to give to people, and unfortunately, I've run into a lot of takers. So there is a limit there, and there is a fine line between wanting to do it yourself and realizing, hey, it's to this point, I need to ask for help. And I know exactly where you're coming from. Also, I wanted to make sure you got rid of that guy. Because if he wasn't there for you,
absolutely,
you want somebody like that in your life.
Right.
Yeah. No, I actually have a wonderful man who is always on my case if he thinks I need to be asking for help. He'll be saying, you know, I know a great book you should read.
There you go.
Yeah. So, no, I did say goodbye to the old one, and I've got a great guy now.
Thank you, Mary, very much for the call. What about her point? And we all know people like this. I've sure run into my share of takers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of experiencing a little senior moment. Perhaps you can help me here. We're talking about the parable of the person who's injured on the roadside. And
the Good Samaritan.
Thank you. Yeah. The Good Samaritan. The story of the Good Samaritan is great, actually, because the Good Samaritan doesn't just take this man who's been beaten and robbed into his own home. He actually takes him to another place and pays to have him set up there and cared for. And he does come back and he checks on him, but he doesn't adopt this person into his life. He establishes some sort of boundaries. So even though he was there to give help, he didn't let it overtake his life. And so there is that temptation for the takers out there to keep going. But we need to be responsible for our own boundaries and knowing when to say no. You know, perhaps you could check with someone else this time. You know, perhaps so-and-so would be able to help you better than me this time around. So that we establish our own parameters mm-hmm. where we're going to say, yeah, we'll help, or no, not this time.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary, very much for your call. Laura in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Hi. There's three things that I want to say. One is that anyone who needs any type of help at all, if they don't know where to go, they can dial 211, at least in Dane County. I'm not sure if this is a federal program or a Dane County program. But 211, if you dial that and you tell them what you need, they will find the resources for you and hook you up with them, or at least direct you. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is United Way is the umbrella organization for all of the nonprofit agencies. And so if 211 is not a federal program, then anyone could call United Way, and United Way will direct you towards the proper nonprofit in the community. And the other thing, the third thing, is the health care issues. There's a lack of adequate health insurance. To my knowledge, I don't believe it's been fixed because in Wisconsin, there are somewhere between 40 and 80,000 people on a wait list to receive Badger care. And I myself have a weird situation healthcare-wise with having worked for the public schools for 5.5 years, and after working for the public schools for 5.5 years, because I have a retirement account from working in the public schools, I don't qualify for Medicaid. So I have inadequate health insurance because I have Medicare, because I have a disability. And so that covers 80% of my costs. So there are deficits in the health care system. So there is help out there through nonprofit organizations, but there is also a serious crisis in health care.
Mm. Thank you very much, Laura. Is there a 211 system in most communities? I guess I'm not aware of that. Nora?
I'm not aware of that either, actually. And that may be something that is just specific to Wisconsin.
Or to Dane County, yeah.
Or Dane County, yes. At least I know where I live there isn't. It certainly is a valuable service. And
yes.
I'm a big fan of the United Way as well. They are a great clearinghouse of all of the resources that are available out there, and they're fabulous people who are interested in helping. And I do think it is an issue within the U.S. because we are so independent-minded. It's even written into our Declaration of Independence. It is our primary value. And it makes it really difficult for us. And I especially think about, because of this time in my life with my mother being elderly, my father's already passed, and I know I'm so alike so many other baby boomers out there who are experiencing this same kind of issue. We have created this society where people live pretty far apart now.
Yes.
It used to be that families lived in towns or lived in the same community or lived in the same house, and they were there supporting each other. And now life has gotten very complex in the U.S., and people are not living near each other, which makes it difficult. We've created a society that loves automobiles, so our towns are spread apart and grocery stores are far away from where people are living, and so you need an automobile just to get around. If you're to a point or even handicapped to a certain point where you can't drive, then you're relying on others to help you do that, whether it's a public system or private individuals. It starts adding up, and we're not there to support each other like we used to be. So the requests for help become even more important to us long term.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Laura, very much for your call. Kathleen in Duluth, hello.
Hi. It's always nice to speak with a fellow Kathleen.
Yes, Kathleen, I love your name.
I've been really enjoying listening to the discussion, and it's made me think about our sort of social and cultural gender expectations regarding help in this country. As a woman, I find myself maybe having conflicted emotions and thoughts when men, particularly of maybe more traditional minds about gender roles, offer me help unsolicitedly, maybe holding doors open for me, or sort of like your story about the plane offering to lift your bag maybe before you've asked for it. And I find myself struggling with acknowledging the kindness that's implicit in that while also feeling the understanding that they maybe wouldn't offer the same help if I was a man. And I was just wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, and if you work with any of your clients in regards to that.
Oh, that's interesting, Kathleen.
Kathleen, I love that question, and it is actually a funny one because my husband and I talk about this all the time, because I at one point I just decided that if somebody was going to do something nice for me, I was going to let them do it. I didn't care if they were opening a door, if they were picking up a box, if they were, you know, loading my bag into an airline bin. I didn't care. I just made that choice. I decided, no, I'm going to let people do this for me. And then when I have a chance, I'm going to do that for someone else. I understand all the pressures, because believe me, I grew up and I grew up during a time when feminism was really strong, and I consider myself a feminist. And my husband and I laugh about it because he says I'm not a feminist because I let people help me, but I want that help. And I know how good it makes them feel when they do it, so mm-hmm. I let them do it. Whatever their motivation is, I'm just going to interpret it in a way that makes me feel great.
Yeah. I had this thing happen. It's funny how they stay with you, too, that I'm one of those. I can do this myself, too, I think, Nora, that mm-hmm. I'm really competent. I can do everything, and then you almost fall off a ladder and, you know, realize that this isn't a good thing. But I was... My car is sensitive to tire pressure. It's a simple thing, but it was a big thing, tire pressure. And so, you know, the light comes on, and I'm thinking, because once there was a nail in it, so I'm thinking, geez, I don't want to be driving and have a flat tire, so I got to stop and figure out what the story is. So I'm at this gas station, and there's an air thing, and I put the money in to get some air, and I realized that I didn't know how to operate this thing. It seemed... a little complicated to me, and I couldn't get the pressure right, and I couldn't read it to figure out, and I couldn't find the thing on the tire that said what the pressure should be, and I was getting mad at myself. And the guy next to me who was cleaning his car said, would you like some help? And I just thought, well, you know, first of all, the people don't offer that very often. And I thought, oh. And so my immediate response was, oh, no, I got it. Even though I'm looking around and still, and he said, I'm going to help you. So I said, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. So he came over and spent a good 7 minutes, you know, making sure everything was good. And my immediate response, of course, was to run inside to make sure I had money to give him, because you can't just accept help. And so I offered him some money for it. And I said, thank you very much. And he said, oh, no, 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 no. I wouldn't take money for this. Oh, no. And But it's interesting, that has stayed with me, and it taught me something that I didn't know what I was doing. Why didn't I say, yes, please, could you help me? That would be so nice. And secondly, that you can offend people when you offer money sometimes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, people do want to just help from the goodness of their hearts.
I know they do, by golly.
They know something we don't know, or they can do something we can't do. You know, we're not taught how to ask for help. We're not taught how to be gracious necessarily when we receive help. I mean, we're taught the basics to say thank you. I actually talk about the three thanks rule in the book. And the first time you say thank you is when they agree to help you. Mm-hmm. And the next time is at the completion of what they've done. And then the third time is maybe if you run into them again a little later and say, hey, thanks again. That really helped me out of a jam.
Right.
So that they really get it. They understand that you're truly grateful.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're not really taught how to ask for help. And if anything, we're that whole idea of being competent and self-sufficient is really hammered into us.
It sure is. Mm-hmm. Nora Bouchard is our guest. She is the author of Mayday, Asking for Help in Times of Need. We have time for a couple more phone calls. So if you'd like to join us, do so right now. 800-486-8655. Is the number. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And just a follow-up on that 211, Scotty's done some research. There is an FCC website in many states, and I don't know how much of Wisconsin this is true, but dialing 211 provides individuals and families in need with a shortcut through what may be a bewildering maze of health and human service agencies' phone numbers. If you dial 211, those in need of assistance are referred and sometimes connected to appropriate agencies and community organizations. That's a really good thing, Nora.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Absolutely it is. One more anonymous caller from Richland Center. Hi.
Hi. Recently at a nursing home, I was in the company of a number of residents there who seemed very timid and very afraid to ask for help of any kind. For instance, couldn't tell anybody that their panties hadn't come back from the laundry over 3 weeks ago.
Hmm.
Just didn't want to do it because they were busy there and wouldn't ask for the syrup to be brought to the table because they were busy and didn't want to ask for those bananas that were sitting in a basket going to rot on the counter just because they might go to somebody else. And just so many things that they needed help with, they just did not seem to have a voice, or just too afraid to speak up and ask for things for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to start something, but I don't know how to go about doing it to help people get a voice that are in the nursing homes.
Well, that's a good thing to do. Nora?
Well, I think at a very basic level, we don't think we're worthy. That we don't think we're deserving of the help. That even asking for the syrup or for our clothing is a bit too much when someone else seems too busy. And I think this goes back to the whole idea of self-compassion and self-care. We need to stand up for ourselves and to say, you know, we're children of God. We are humans. We are worthy and we deserve help. And once we start really accepting that, it makes it a lot easier to make the requests. And you can do it in a very simple, easy way. You know, you don't have to be tough or aggressive about it. It's just, I would love some syrup for my pancakes. Could someone please pass it to me?
There you go. Yeah.
But it is, I think it goes back to this idea. Do we really deserve it? And I think we do.
Nora, thank you very much for being with us. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Our guest is the author of May Day, Asking for Help in Times of Need. Nora Bouchard, our guest. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour. Thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in what is a lovely day outside, downtown Milwaukee. News coming up. We'll be with you again tomorrow. Thanks very much for listening, and thanks for all of your from-the-heart calls today.